a lot of notions about the world, you know, initiation. And when you literally get down to the nitty-gritty of it, it simply means introducing you to something that you ignore, didn't know what it was, and suddenly you come to realize what it means, and then you may be happy or very disgusted with it, with the introduction.
See?
Hmm? Yeah, if that's all there is.
Well, you know, with this, well, that's what I thought you meant about, you know, maybe having it just a
little. After you're introduced to it, the sensitivity of recognition is heightened, and it's in heightened state. It acts now as a guide to the internal source of your nature, and the reservoir of your internal feelings. It guides you back to that source of all your feelings, which is extrasensory and ultrasonic. Therefore, the sun current, which is audible inside now, is the basis of your nature, is the source of your nature, and is your nature, one and the same thing. So when your mind ceases to intellectualize on it and begins to feel, then the whole body vibrates with it. It gets so loud that you don't even know it's all over in the room, the whole atmosphere. You're for the first time you are having what is called ultrasonic audition. You're hearing ultrasonically. You're hearing way beyond sonic level, way beyond supersonic levels. Yes, and very crippling. Yes, you can be paralyzed with sound, silence. Extreme silence is paralyzing.
What do you mean by paralyzed?
The cells will go into spasm, or shutting down. They'll shut off. Dead. No. It will go into what is called suspended states of animation. Suspended animation. Extreme silence will induce suspended animation. These are physiological symptoms of extreme silence. Now, we can make the brain stop by extreme silence. Where it only functions on command from an external source. There's no internal function. It'll just act like a computer after. Once the silence is reached to the point where the brain, between sonic and ultrasonic and supersonic, mesh in the cell. This is a transcendent state, and you can enter that state very fast in water. You ever go underwater swimming?
Yeah, that's a good like a deafening.
Continue. If your experiences were wrong enough, you would find out a lot of things.
I used to happen to me in the shower. I stand up in the shower for hours and hours. Frightening feeling. I am. Pruning.
You're 80% water, so don't be frightened. The gravitational pressure. Remember, your brain has liquids It depends on liquids, and liquids depends on pressure. So, what you call consciousness is just a rate of acceleration of the energy level of the life inside the cell. So if there is no sound in there to relate to, the cell will go into suspended animation. Now, why does a baby cry when it comes out into the world?
It's insulted.
No, it has lost the contact of the ultrasonic relationship of floating around in the sac in the mother's womb. The abrupt severance of the umbilicus puts it into the sonic sphere, and therefore its fluids are altered. If the umbilicus is never severed, it will never cry. They smack him to make sure he's living. It's bad enough that he's in an environment where it's pretty rough. You got to impress upon his mind it's rough. But this is what sound does to us. And sound, where does sound travel faster?
In water.
Alright, does sound travel faster in water than light?
Light travels faster than sound.
Where? In what in dimension?
In air.
Light travels
only in air, light travels faster than sound. Yeah. It can't travel faster in water. It's like a slow poke in water compared to sound.
It's very interesting if you're at a beach and you put your head underwater and have somebody, I used to do it when I was a kid, had some other kid down the beach somewhere, quite a distance away, click two rocks together underneath.
Mm-hmm.
You can hear this for a great distance underwater.
Oh yeah. There is no end to it once you click it underwater. If the whole universe around you was one big ocean, you were standing in it, millions and millions of light years and the water's expanded, you tap it. It's gone past the speed of light squared. Sound will travel speed of light squared underwater, but not above. Where above, light will travel in the medium of air at the speed of light 106,000 miles a second. But sound will travel faster underwater. Now there's a reason for it. This is a universe of light. And therefore, light has precedent in this environment that generates the illusion for our existence. This is not a universe of our true soul nature. We can't live in water, but we can't live without water. So the sound current is audible in the human body because it's 80% liquids. Otherwise it will never be audible, and you could never travel on the beam of light back to God in this world of illusion, because you'll end up back in illusion. You'll need the sound current that has to travel through the media of 80% liquid in your system to get back to the core of creation, which is beyond the speed of light squared. So the audible light stream inside is the actual force field designed by the Creator to be in the world and outside of the world, to be in the illusion of light acting as sound and outside of the illusion of light acting as sound. You see? So the scripture says, no man saw God but heard his voice. And God is that light, God is sound. See, the creative life energy is ultrasonic frequencies, which triggers light. And Jesus which is the Son or the Word made flesh. That is, when the human brain is capable of generating self-recognition of the audible life stream. You understand? In its totality, it's Christ-related. That means it's conscious of its intelligence within the vibratory nature. That's what Christ intelligence really is. That's what master consciousness really is. That's what they call a master. When that awareness is relating to the vibratory rates on a conscious level, then that's a bridge. Now, Jesus was saying, I saw, don't mean the man Jesus. It means that the intelligence within the vibratory structure of matter perceived Satan, don't mean some guy with a pair of horns or a pitchfork, means the centrifugal energy fall from heaven, means go down. See, on the earth here, it looked like it's going up, and actually it's coming down from the levels of being, like a light. He didn't say like a sound. See, the differentiation of the science is very exact. The science is just a very exact science. It's so exact that we'll instrument it one day. Like a light, I saw Satan fall from heaven. I saw the negative charge of the creative energy. Not bad charge. That negative print. You can't make a picture without a negative. We're talking of photography, cosmic photography. Between sound and light, and it's a motion picture process. This light, this particular principle, came down in direct opposition to sound. So Satan has no power over me. Light has no power over sound. Where will you find in this universe light is powerful than sound? Not possible. Ultrasonic forces are superior than light vibrations. What ultrasonic can do, light can't do. The ultrasonic frequencies are great because they're responsible for the whole creation. Satan has no power over me, meaning the light vibrations are not greater than the ultrasonic frequency, which is the audible life current. Now, I saw Satan fall from heaven like a light. Simply saying that this whole creation is a manifestation of light in a downward movement from the source of being, Akal, and the timelessness, that's the word Akal means, the opposite of time, Kal, negative charge. And the sound current, or the Christ intelligence or master consciousness, which is the Lord within you, the resident principle of self-recognition, this principle sits on the right hand of the Father, the right side of the brain. The body is the temple of the creative principle. There is no other temple for God, not the pagodas and the synagogues or cathedral. This is the temple. And it's a 10-door temple. There are 9 visible doors and 1 invisible door to the naked eye, but not invisible to the internal self. And the point between the eyebrow is that focal point, that is where you enter the alpha levels. You cannot enter alpha level if you don't focus the eyes up. No way possible. You can't shift from the beta level until you do that. And 3 weeks ago, I was up in the Pain Research Center in Wisconsin, and I went through extensive tests for several hours with alpha machines, proving techniques that are taught and spoken to a very good friend of mine who's a surgeon, neurosurgeon, backing up all that has been taught about yoga. He wanted to know, how do you get in to certain levels? And the very first test they do is to see if you can raise your temperature. Now, if you can raise your temperature, it's called biofeedback, and see how long it takes to raise your temperature 2 degrees. That's all they ask you, to raise your temperature 2 degrees. Now, most people take about 3-4 hours to raise their temperature 2 or 3 degrees on a machine. I experimented for 12 minutes and raised the temperature to 9 degrees. Of all the techniques that I've used, the simplest one is repetition. Now, it didn't matter what word I used. I could have said Coca-Cola, Coca-Cola, Mercedes-Benz, Volkswagen, Volkswagen. I simply repeated a word in my brain, one word, a holy name, the principle of repetition, not the words themselves. The principle of repetition is the basis of acceleration of thermal condition in the brain. Now, if you never said nothing, and you were capable of not thinking of anything, merely letting the brain relax, the temperature would shoot right up, because relaxation produces heat. Internal combustion of the brain cells go on by non-activity.
How do you lower your temperature?
Not too many people know that. And this is the one of the things that doctors were worried about, because they've never seen it done. Oh, you lower temperature. They know how to raise temperature. Lots of swamis went up there. Lowering the temperature is a different technique. And you all got it. You got both techniques, to raise it, you got it to lower it. The holy breath. I dropped my temperature 4 degrees in 6 minutes by using the holy breath.
How many times?
Any amount of time I want, if you can drop it. Knowing the techniques is knowing the principle, not knowing mumbo-jumbo. Each registration of the holy breath equals to what?
1 year.
1 year evolution.
1 year, yeah.
All right, so if I, what did I do to my body to bring it down 4 degrees?
Zap yourself ahead. 9 years.
No.
4 years?
4 years, that's 4 registrations in the spine.
That's equivalent to 4 degrees.
4 degrees, loss of temperature. Basic mathematics, basic law of physics.
Does that mean if you did it for 29 registrations at one time, you'd drop it 29? That wouldn't happen. You'd drop it 29 degrees?
Yes, you'd drop it 29 degrees. Because your body's going to get cold. It's going to refrigerate.
Put the thermometer in your mouth, you do this?
Mm-hmm. But they are even measured with much more sensitive instruments than thermometers. These are electro-measurements. Where you can't cheat with a thermometer. A thermometer you can cheat, this you can't cheat. Either you know something to make it go down or you don't know nothing. You see, the neurosurgeon says to me after, I said to him, I didn't know what the measurement's supposed to be, because I've never been on the machines before. So when I came off, I said to the technician, I must be pretty average from all these measurements. He says, heck no. He said, we don't even get kind of measurements like this. So that was his remark. Then I asked the neurosurgeon, he says, I must be pretty average from the measurements. He says, no, he says, I expected this from you, but when you want to find out and check you out, just for sure. But you prove out exactly what you talk by the machine.
Did you tell him how you did it?
Well, he's an initiate, he knows.
I don't know, does that mean that when you do the whole
breath,
that temperature
phenomenon
is actually happening?
Yeah, if your temperature goes down, but some of us, it may go down about 3 or 4 degrees, because it's what we call cellular refrigeration. And cellular refrigeration is the actual process of non-decomposition of the cells after death. To him that overcome it, I will not send forth a second time, but I'll make him appear in the house of the Lord. You are performing cellular refrigeration, which is non-decomposition. So when this body puts off corruption, which is decomposition, and takes on non-corruption, that's non-decomposition, by virtue of physiocellular refrigeration, we have what is called immortality or continuum in the cells. We're just changing the semantics to bring it up to more objective data. You are living with a reality, but not knowing it. And the scientists are catching up with it. We ain't going to be too far off one day when there's no communication between scientists and saints.
You just sit down and tick away. But we are catching up with it, you see. They're already catching up with the Saints' ways of living. The equipment is making us more conscious of the simplicity of living. Any raise of temperature is beyond 4 or 6 degrees, you're going to have a tremendous change in your body. Don't get that nothing to do with the infection or no infection.
Yeah.
You either know something or you don't know something. If you do what you're supposed to do and don't try to question it, you'll pass through the gates of hell and come back. Like the yogi that walk across the hot coals, chanting, ouch, 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 ouch. But a Catholic priest, when he chant ouch, he was burnt.
Well, is that because when you meditate, your feet become numb?
Yes, when you meditate, the brain slows down and the body goes into suspended animation. And the shifting of the temperature up is a form of refrigeration.
What is the difference between the yogi and the priest? One burned his feet and the other didn't.
Simple.
And they both did the same thing.
Yeah, one was saying ouch as a mantra, one was saying ouch out of resentment.
Oh,
you see, he wasn't trained to think one-pointedness with one word in his mind.
Nice.
Goodness. He wasn't trained that way. He was trained to do Our Father and Hail Marys and Lord's Prayer and everything. This guy was trained to say, ouch, ouch, or Coca-Cola, Coca-Cola, or Mercedes-Benz, or Hari Om, Hari Om. One thing in his mind. The essence of this, the result of the experiment is simply this. Your brain becomes highly concentrated and fires off certain forces if it is centered on one thing by virtue of repetition. Now if it has to think of 8 different things, then you over distribute the brain charge. By thinking of too many things it can't center when you try to repeat it. So if you minimize it to a simple 1 or 2 word concentration, then the brain will do the job easier. So the yogis in India have even minimized it to Om, the mere vibration of the audible life current, and try to stick with that. The key is in the repetition. Master Charan Singh tells us this in his own writings. So it's not the words that makes the thing work, it's the repetition and the consistency. But if you make it simple, it goes on better.
When you were saying before how the devil, which was the negative in the form of light, came down. Now, when you see an aura in the form of light, would that be the negative leaving?
Mm-hmm. In the world of light, what other light is going to be positive? Now you start to wake up to some of all these researches that are going on. You see, your questions are leading you to discover some truth about yourself. We don't like to disillusion these researches and their experiences. Jesus was very emphatic. What a profit to man to gain the whole world and lose his what? And what can you gain in this world but another illusion? So when you see a person's aura, what did you see?
Another illusion.
You saw another illusion. But when you hear the sankara, it's not an illusion. It is when a person walks in the room and you can hear that vibratory rate enhanced then you know that person is pulling you up with them. When the sun is man is lifted up, you will be lifted up. When the resident force is self-recognized in an individual, it'll vibrate louder. And those that come within the proximity will hear it loud in themselves, they don't know why, and it starts going up. But you won't see no aura. You may strain yourself to see an aura. You may see something, but that's another illusion again. There was a man that went to the ashram of Chan Singh and stayed there every day when they had darshan. And he was a very good psychic. At best, he was very good of all those that went around. And while he was there, he saw no aura around the master. And he told them, your master is auraless. He has no aura. And I don't know why you call him a master in the first place. Anyway, when he was ready to leave, one of the men said, would you like to take a drive with us? So they got in the car and they drove close to about 20 miles. And he says, now look back to the ashram. You know what he saw?
One big light.
One big light. Then he realized something had happened. While he was close up to the light, he couldn't see the real light. When he got away from the real light, he saw the light in contrast to the illusory light. So what did Jesus say when he was in the body? While I'm in the world, I am the what of the world? The real light of the world is in resident sun current. But it doesn't radiate like an aura to us. The experience is what... Now, people go and see the master at times. I've seen the master. There's no aura around him. Per se, looking for an illusionary condition. But there's a light and radiance in the man's skin and eyes. And his darshan glows. And you know that this is what the Christ consciousness is all about. It's the living bliss of the self. It's the in-resident spirit, the in-resident sun current vibrating. But in his presence, the sun current was going like crazy in my brain. And I didn't see no light. And some people who came there, I remember one woman says, boy, he's sick. He got a gray cloud all around him. He's so drained out. All the lights around him are black. But this is her own mental projection.
So in other words, don't believe what you see, but believe what you hear.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to the spiritual life, you see, because they can't back out what they say. They're committed to whatever they say. Whenever you say something in the spiritual life, you're committed to it. Because you're using the audible life principle. So it's not what go into you, but what comes out of you. Not what you may see with your eyes tells you the truth. It's what you're going to say about it. It tells you the truth. Not what you're going to eat or ingest in consciousness that will defile you. But what you may project out in consciousness will defile you. So when you hear, it's what you project. You're saying something that is there. So even all the great teachers will tell you, every word we utter, we consciously release the audible life current. And we are liable for it in spite of the fact that we are not conscious of it. But we are liable for it. So we have to be very aware of this current in ourselves. Answer your question? Beautiful. You folks are, you know, Master is showering you with love. Yeah, he's sure showering you with love. Great. But that's what love is, you know. Let the love flow. Pretty. It needs to stay right here. In this environment with the good vibes. We have a meditation room at chapel, and there's a chair there with this one too. And I got a meditation cushion that is molded the shape of the hip. So. But it's also that it says, it doesn't matter if I'm there or not, come and meditate. That chair's got enough vibes for all of us. And if you sit in it, it'll give you the hot feet. Not necessarily. He may not notice any change in temperature going up, and he may notice changes in temperature going up. But on and going down, but all he needs to know that if there's a rise in temperature, he has gone into the alpha level. If there's a drop in temperature, is in the theta level. That's a deeper level than the alpha. If he begins to squirm and become aware of a goose pimple sensation going up his body, then he's in delta level. See, the squirming is the indication of the term kundalini. That means that paraxis action of the sympathetic and parasympathetic nerves are letting go of their tension and are firing for the first time through the endocrine gland. So that goose pimple sensation, which is a bridge between hot and cold, and it's pimple, you know, you feel like little pimples on you. This is delta level. Now you notice music in Trigata, light camp. Only music can trigger that. And that's really going to the deep levels. There's one other level of the brain, but that only appears when we're passing out of the body, not when we're going into some experiences like projection or soul traveling. There's one other wave that occurs in the body. It's called omega wave. It only occurs when we're leaving the body and the body is going to go through breakdown or transition. Then we have omega wave. So your scripture says, I'm the alpha and the omega. Strange way we end up coming back to. There are no coincidences. I have found constant science, which means constant truth, which means constant love. The more you get into the realization of God, the more you can discover science. And the more you understand science, you can appreciate love. It's funny.
You need both.
You need both love and understanding. But you remember I said, I saw Satan fall like a light from heaven. But that was not the end of the statement that Jesus made. He says, but Satan is the father of, see the word he used? But light is the origin of duality. You get it now? Time is the cause of what?
Illusion.
So you see, when he says Satan is the father of lies, he was just using religious semantics to describe the cosmic truth of beingness. We're dealing with beingness all the time. To be or not to be is the question. He didn't say to think or not to think is the question. See, beingness is feeling. Thinking is still computing. Mind manipulating. But beingness is flow. Beingness is glow. These terms bring out quality of self. And it's nameless after a point of experience. There is no name for it. That's why it's called a noun. No name. Na means name, and anam means no name. Kal means time, and akal means no time. So it's nameless, it's verbal-less communication. It's all ultrasonic. It's very, very difficult when we've been educated with a lot of money, spent on halls of learning, to tell ourselves that this world cannot be described without using a word. But if you go back to Walt Whitman, he said in his own words, when I begin to describe to my lower self what my higher self is, my tongue refused to talk. What better way to describe the nameless state? You know, he was well ahead of his consciousness because he was cosmically, yet cosmic consciousness. And he says, I used to lie down and hear the grass grow. Hear, he doesn't see it. Hear the grass grow. The audible life current was ever present to him. Like the Tao, you know. And the Tao is the way, the Tao is the listener. The Tao is the tune. The universe, for simple language now, it can be, we live in a cosmic polarity of nowness. We're all familiar with the word polarity. When a thing is in a state of polarity, that means it has a neutral state, it has a positive state, and it has a negative state. We live in this cosmic polarity of nowness. That means no tangible form is a reality. And polarity is a condition imposed upon the no-form existence. Very, very, very frustrating when you're using words to describe this condition. But what is rewarding and what is illuminating and elevating is that, oh well, see, oh well, the statement oh well is self-liberating, non-descriptive or specific to make it binding, but at the same time is release, and at the same time is now. Interesting how we arrive at these terms to describe feelings. So when Professor Max Muller wrote his book, and this is an interesting book if you could get it to read, The Origin of Language and the Origin of Religion. And he who would want to follow the source of religion must first discover the source of an origin of language. See? If you're going to discover the source of religion, you have to discover the source of language. It starts. In the beginning was the word communication, speech, language. And sound is projected by touch.
Commander.
Two things gotta touch each other before something can be expressed. Get it? But now try to write it down. You got to have an alphabet. This is pure Sanskrit, not written. Sanskrit. Sound being without script, not to write, without written form. Now if you try to write this particular thing that you're hearing in the atmosphere here, this disturbance of these ear waves, you have to originate what? An alphabet. And if you try to originate an alphabet, then you go back to geometry. And geometry is angles, a different angle. So the angel now. So the written Sanskrit is called Deva Nagari. Deva means angel, Nagari means expressions or forms of the angel. Anglic forms, which you call alphabet. So there is no real Sanskrit, but there is Devanagari Sanskrit, a type of Sanskrit, a written form based upon the Deva principle, based upon geometrical angles. And when we go to the origin of language to see it, here we are confronted with the reality of it.
Would you say that your match here is a geometry of
the what?
You get into your match here in like the Bible, where you're reducing the words in the Bible, the ancient, the original words to numbers?
Yes. Everything is reduced back to 0 to 9. But these are all, again, angles. Devanagari. God geometrizes, but with angular movements. Now, we only have certain shapes and forms in the geometrical movements, and they keep repeating themselves over and over. In other words, every geometrical form originates from a dot. Peculiar. You have to start with a dot and go out straight line, go off another straight line, come back with another straight line, go off another straight line, come up with a straight line, come around the straight line. Amazing. We haven't found a single thing in our universe that makes it workable or utilizable outside of what is already here in the structure.
In the mind, they're all projections.
Yeah, they're all projections. Yeah. So the dot is one, mono. You see? But mono is triad. That means it has a positive movement, and a negative movement, and a neutral movement. So, the whole universe, then, is based upon this triad relationship. This is polarity. Now, but this polarity is music. This polarity is music. That means it is harmony, melody, rhythm. Beginning was the word, or what is the word? Word is song, song is what? Music. And if music be the food of the pleon, and what is man? Man is soul, therefore is the sound current crystallized as soul. There's only one soul, God. We don't have a soul, do you? We are an expression of the Sankaran. And the harmony, the rhythm, and the melody is what we are in residence as a state of polarity. But this state of polarity must follow an octave for it to have what? Orchestration. So the octave is your eightfold levels. That means matter acting on matter, energy acting on matter, consciousness acting on matter, energy acting on energy. That's the halfway mark. That's the first and last point of manifestation. Then the fifth level up, or fifth realm, or fifth plane, is consciousness acting on energy. Sixth one would be consciousness acting on consciousness. The seventh level up is?
Would be discordant.
It would be discordant, and then we will have what is called malfunctions on a physical level in the form of disease. That your are tendencies, which are emotional patterns, making for psychosomatic conditions. And then you would have also extrasensory or fourth dimensional problems or mind splitting, schizophrenic actions at another level. And also you'll finally have what is called spiritual problems. Total health is spirituality, and spirituality is cosmic harmony, cosmic balance, or polarity of the cells, music, buoyancy. When somebody walks in and they're glowing and happy, don't they look to you like a melody? You just, right. So their exuberance and their quality is the keynote of the perfect balance in their cells. They are glowing. This is what you are looking for. They are in that state. These are the outward symptoms of an inward harmony, which is music. Now, you attend a recital and everybody is in the glum. And as soon as the recital is all over, what is the big ovation? What is the expression on people's face? Right. And you look at the musician, what is his expression? It's glowing, radiant. That's what they call radiant form. The internal glow of the harmonious rhythms of the cells. Now this radiant form is projective. That means you can close your eyes and see it because it's in a unity field. So when you say you're looking for the radiant form, you're looking for the harmonious synchronization of this whole form field. Now if you look at this object and don't blink your eyes and then close it, what will it have? All right, and what is persistence of vision? A retentive pattern, which is the radiant form of your own self. Nobody else form. You don't worship nobody, you worship yourself. You worship what you originally captured from the retinal photography. This is what you see and this is what you involve or merge. You and it become one. So we don't say you become one with light. You become one with the sound current. Because you leave the radiant form at the sixth level and go on with some current to the seventh and eighth levels. At the sixth level is consciousness acting on consciousness, therefore you have a radiant form. At the seventh level it's beingness acting on consciousness. There is no radiant form, it's sound again. The sound is beingness. And the eighth level is beingness acting on beingness. There is no name for it, it's again sound. It's ultrasonics. But you gotta get up there. You gotta come down and then you gotta get rid of a lot of mental notions too. That when you hit the levels about what it's all about. And review it in simplicity. And the stark truth about it is very, very ego-shattering. That you went from bottom to the top and discovered there was nothing there but now. And now has no illusions of any type but straightforwardness, candid action of behavior. The candid action of one's behavior is childlike. Can you be more penetrating in behavior than a child? Who exposes you to yourself faster than a child's candidness? He sees through the falsities of our inner place of being because he has none. He's pure being. Very, very, very earth-shaking to one's own nature, and one goes through all these levels and hear of all these different teachings and go through all these different things, and then to find out in the reality of it that's where he returns back. He returns back to the simplicity. Unless you be like one of these, you cannot enter. Very, very difficult. Yeah. The masters do not choose models unless they are highly positive or 100% positive that the model is accurate before they'll choose a model to relate to guide you. And you see, you got to be like that child, they really mean. Your whole approach and your whole transformation is exactly like that child. It comes back to natural candidness, natural nature, simplicity. And we don't want to use animal models. He jumps around like a chubby little fox terrier. That would be a very poor description. But if you say he's like a child, very irresponsible. Very, very candid, very down to earth, very cherubic. We are describing the true nature. There is no inhibition flow. The great flow. The great. And it boils down again to the feeling of the flow of bliss. So when you start looking upwards, you're in the alpha level. It's blissful. The half-awake sleep state is alpha level. Very blissful. When you come down from that state, you tend to be irritable. So blissfulness or alpha level states, any kind of label you want to call it, is a form of drunkenness, intoxication, or self-poisoning, and also very self-addicting. But it's not detrimental type of addiction. That's one thing about it. It's regenerative type of addiction.
It's kind of nice to get high.
Ramakrishna always used to say that he was drunk all the time.
Right. And I drink thy name and I get drunk all over again. You have to name the sun current. You have to imbibe the sun current. Means you have to feel it and listen to it. And get engulfed or engulfed in that whirring sound. The whirring sound is more melodious, more rhythmic, more harmonious than a musical instrument. All the vibrations go. Listening to your own some frequencies of the structure of the body is the most fantastic exposure of self. And it brings peace, it's blissful. In the West, we are not told or trained to listen to our blood, or listen to our heartbeat or our brain beat. But now we know that if you listen to them, you can get rid of a whole host of diseases. It's called biofeedback. Life feedback, life support, life control from within oneself. No man take my life from me. These are all terms for the same thing. The only difference between this spiritual person, the spiritual semantics, and the scientific person, the scientific semantics is this. that the spiritual person has a heritage behind him, a tradition, a sense of direction, for all these things really fall in place and a viable use for them. The scientific mind only sees it as another tool for handling distresses, but it's a very useful tool. So meditation is not an end, it's a process. And what you call brain relaxation, another name for meditation now, is a very, very necessary form of therapy for an environment with increased tensions. So if you take time out to relax your brain and to listen to its pulsations, don't do it mechanical, do it on some sense of reverence, and it will be just as effective as if you call it meditation. But do it with reverence. Now if you sit down and chant, that is the same thing. Forget them, you can forget all the semantics and chant with joy for the first time. Really chant, because the singing of the praises of the Lord is singing the fact that you are communing with Spirit now. And it's the joy of doing it. So it doesn't matter now if you use the word meditation or brain relaxation or you're going into the silence. These labels eventually lose their importance. The important thing is, are you happy? Where you are, do you feel relaxed? Do you feel inner composure? Are you content? Are you healthy? Are you simple in your manners? Are you kind to yourself? Do you love yourself? That's what's important. Nobody can love you, if you don't love yourself first. So Master Yogananda used to say, laugh and the world laughs at you, and if you can't laugh, take two toothpicks and prop your lips up. Well, because a frown don't get us nowhere, and we actually burn up the energy in ourselves when we go to frown and worry too much. We can't carry nothing in the first place, and we have commitments even if we don't try. And that's like the man, who tried to escape from the world, the yogi. He says, I'm going to renounce the world. So he got himself two loincloths, one to wear and one to spare, change. So he hung up the spare one that people can change, and he meditating, and he gathered a couple of people around him after a while. So one day, while he's meditating, along came a little mouse, start nibbling at his loincloth. Well, you can imagine his consternation. His only other spare cloth, and this mouse there come along to chew it. Well, he didn't want to kill the mouse, but he can't let it go on that way, because he would have no more spare loincloth. Student says, Master, you need a cat to get rid of the mouse. Okay, you go get the cat. They brought the cat. Cat got rid of the mouse, but there aren't no more mice around. What is the cat going to do? Cat wants food. Starts to make a lot of racket. So the yogis begin to get irritable, disturbing him in his meditation. The students again say, well, Master, the cat drinks milk. He needs a cow. Okay, you get the cow. Brought the cow, milked the cow, fed the cat. But he can't leave the cow outside because Mr. Tiger is going to eat him. He's got to build some kind of a compound to protect it. So you know what he said? I'm going back to the city. Because what he did, he brought the city to the jungle. Well, it was a waste of time to stay out in the jungle trying to protect himself from the tiger and everything. I was going to go back to the city where everything was working. That's it. Bring it on.
One thought I had back when you were talking about the word now, and you had us turn it around the other way to one. It's also interesting if you turn the word now upside down.
Yeah.
You get Nam, a name.
Nam. That's right.
But you see, interesting thing about the word name, it comes from the word Nam. But you see, it's N-A-M, and then if you put a hyphen between the M and the E, and you call it name, you see something very interesting about it. You see, sound current, audible life stream. E is a unit of energy, and Nam is name or sound, so it's sound energy. That's what I'm already saying. See, ego is energy going away from you. We really don't have an ego, you see. We try to build up psychological references for energy going out of you. What we have is different degrees of pressures, and every form of illness is karma, and karma is pressure that is backing up on itself. So we can measure psychological illnesses now in terms of electrical pressure. Therefore we can correct it now. That's why acupuncture works. Acupuncture is the art of balancing psychophysical pressures, because we're dealing with electrical bodies. And there are 14 meridians or loops that spin themselves around the human body, and in these loops or bands there are 800 entrances and exits that cross back and forth, and once you know where these bands are and where these entrances and exits are, you can correct a lot of problems that are caused by backup pressure.
It's a psychological problem too. So you're indicating that acupuncture could be used for various psychological illnesses.
Well, I use it to correct addiction. I use it to correct deep depression, hypotension. I use it for correcting smoking, alcoholic. I use it for correcting addiction to drugs. Because it's all pressure.
Does it also apply to things like paranoia and schizophrenia?
It's all pressure. You see, pressure has a rate of pulsation. And the pulsation has a particular symptomatic reaction. And the brain can only compute in terms of pulses. And the computing is based upon the orientation of the retina. So if you see a person suffering from schizophrenia, we know definitely there's a heightened pulsation in some part of the brain that's interfering with the retina to compute properly the geometrical shapes to which his memory is projecting. We are changing our whole concept of our psychological problems into more tangible electrical conditions, and getting rid of a host of illnesses that were merely not illnesses no more.
Well, how did they get to be what they were?
Now, all right, let's take an addiction. What is an addiction? And what is a habit? And a need. And what is the need?
Well, do you want to get
something over and over, repetition. So
the repetition causes a pressure to build up. It's like pumping air in a balloon. You have to keep pushing and pushing. So the pressure keeps building up on the expansion. So the urgency and the craving is heightened. So there is an electrical charge in the body, and it centers in certain areas of the body. And within these areas, they fall within the 14 loops or bands on the body. They have to fall within these 14, because these are the energy bands of the body. Now, you may have an addiction, and I may go to your big toe and stick you or squeeze your big toe to release the addiction. Why should your big toe be important to get rid of it? Or I may go to your ears to get rid of your alcoholic craving. But we do get rid of addiction by the ears. It's called auricular therapy. Pull them up. Now, I'll show you something. When your children misbehave, what is the feeling you get to do to them? Ring their ears, right?
Yeah.
Well, this is true. Body language is bioenergy. Bioenergy is therapy. And the same time is the keynote to illness because of the body language. The body language can only follow the thought pattern. And the thought pattern is an energy release. All right, let's locate some of the acupuncture points and see what body language will tell us. Let me show you simple body language. You ever seen this gesture? This is body language.
Yes,
you pick up a...
Oh, yeah.
That's a body language. That's what you call the heart meridian. H-E-A-R-T. So you wear your heart on what? On your sleeve. The gesture is indicative. We didn't invent this. Nature didn't invent it. Nature placed it there and we act it out. Mudra. It's called mudra yoga or gestural language. We haven't learned a single thing new in this world that God didn't put there a long time. And cherry trees produce cherry trees. They don't make tomatoes. The gesture is simply that this is the heart point. Right at this edge of the finger here is it. First entrance for the heart. That meridian runs all the way up, controlling the heart. And it's on this, these two, each finger is the same. But that one, now, on this side of the finger, it's called the small intestine. Because we eat first before we get a heart attack. And if we don't eat properly, we're going to get heart attacks. But that's on this finger. And so when you eat, you're very, very kind of show-offish for wearing your love on your sleeve gesture. You see? The finger is already telling us. So we're going to get diseases similarly in relation to the thought pattern. And the correction of the disease is why the doctors don't like the concept. It's too simple, too obvious. They can't understand why such a science would exist like a humbug to them with all their particular mechanics to comfort such simple types of communication. It's too simple, but yet very, very effective. You can correct the problems on this meridian, one band. A lot of diseases you can correct in there, but that's the heart.
Yeah. Now, what kind of deafness?
Most of our deafness is locked up with our lungs and our liver. And we find that we treat deafness by working on the lung or the liver meridian. The deaf mutes today in China and now most of the world
acupuncture is releasing them right on working on the liver point in the ear. Now, this finger here is called a triple warmer. That means you have three ratios of heat in your body. The heat from your shoulder to the top of your head, or the temperature, is hotter than the temperature from your neck to your groin. And from your groin to your foot, it's colder. So cold, colder. No. This would be the coldest.
Cold.
This is the coldest. Colder, cold. Then this would be hot, hotter, hottest. That's how it works. Triple warm. Triple temperature. So you get the concept of cold. Cold feet. You never hear of cold head.
Mm-hmm.
But keep you cool and you won't blow your cool. You won't get excited.
Get a hot head.
These are natural bio language or body language or so. Alright. This finger, you're familiar with this gesture? But you see where you put it? Your nose. It controls your lungs because you have to breathe. And you're thumbing your finger up at the world, you're showing your puffing up. Tremendous behavior of the individual. Like walking around a peacock with his all puffed out chest. And this is the gesture for it. And the lung and the large intestine are locked up in here. Big gut, big chest. Those are the diseases that follow from, and we treat the diseases of those types of the lung and the large intestine on that meridian. We can't treat it here, it ain't gonna work. Nature done really put the thing up perfectly. Now, familiar with this gesture? It's a dirty gesture to most people, but you know it's a funny phenomenon. This controls the sexual organ, this is called circulation sex. You treat every sexual disease in the human body by working on this meridian. Conception, we can cause the person who is pregnant to have a delivery by working on that particular meridian. And nature placed it there. And we as children growing up as adults into our own body just as, and think we're doing a lot of dirty things, don't even know there's no such thing. Everything I made is clean, there's no such thing unclean. It is we who make up the mental blocks. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
Alright, now. Let's come to the big toe. When they say you stump your big toe, it always seems to make you humble,
mm-hmm.
quiet you down.
Mm-hmm.
Alright. The spleen. He's full of spleen. The guy is too braggart. Get it? Lots of spleen, lots of bragging, full of wind. Right on that big toe. That's the spleen meridian. Nature didn't put it any other place, she put it right here. And you control all the so-called braggadocio problems, psychological, physical, go work on that meridian. Now we come back to the liver. You know, liver is one of the biggest organs in our intestinal makeup. And when we want to prove ourselves to others, we can see how much we can drink our fellow man down. Huh? Right, so we go back to the other side of it too. And we correct on the liver. Now, the kidney, there are two of them.
and they act as what's in the body. They act as filters, right? Yet, between the cave of the chest, where the rib cage is, there's a point. That's like a V. What's that called? Solar plexus. Artificial brain. Artificial filtering of the mind. Not a real brain. So the kidney is located right there in the sole of the foot, either the solar plexus reflex. It ain't going no place because that's where it's located right there. So at the same time, people who do massage can affect the kidney by working on the solar plexus. It filters out both psychological and physical. Down here is the physical reflex, but this is the acupuncture point and that's the reflex point. Now, we have small intestine. No, I'm sorry, you have gallbladder next. The gallbladder is this toe, the fourth toe. And the bladder is the last toe. Liver, stomach. Now, that's 12. The front of the body is called the conception vessel. And the back of the body is called governor vessel, so you have four people. Problems dealing with conception or generation are treated along the front of the body. Problems dealing with governing, that means mainstay, backup. Major muscle action, major decision actions, major mental problems work along the spine.
So the endocrine system is the other
thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So these are all set up by nature. We didn't make them, we just didn't work with them. It's got from body language, we got electro language. From electro language, we got therapy. Now, the tides of the blood that I taught you and I gave you that is involved with the whole principle. The eating of solar nutrition is synchronized. These things cannot work without solar nutrition. Solar nutrition is their basis for their model. Acupuncture and all of them are only as accurate and valid as long as you got solar nutrition as the working model for them. Because the blood changes its location of flow every 2 hours in those organs and in those bands. Now, let's say somebody has some kind of a cramp or pain in the body between 11 and 1. p.m. at night. An ordinary doctor in his hospital and emergency ward would not know what disease to treat. It will take him 4 days of extensive observation and x-rays to arrive at the decision of the cause of that pain in the body that occurred in the human being between 11 and 1. That's a length of time before you can ever arrive at a decision of what caused it. After he's gone through all the pathology and everything. But if you call in an acupuncturist or a reflex therapist, and all he's going to ask is the time of the pain. And he doesn't have to see the patient. He can feel his pulse. And he will tell the person that he has a problem in the gallbladder and that's the cause of the pain between 11 and 1 o'clock at night. His gallbladder produced that pain. Now, the doctor may say you're nuts. The acupuncturist don't have to touch the man. He just finds out the time and he tells him the type of pain, what's causing. He tells him the disease because the energy band tells the time. Says it's in your gallbladder. Now the pathologist may say you're nuts because they haven't ascertained that, they didn't find that out. They may have to prove the man wrong, the acupuncturist wrong. Then the acupuncturist will come over, and if it's a man, he will take his left hand and check the pulse. Yeah, we have 6 pulses in each hand. You're a doctor, a nurse, how many pulses do you know of? How many pulses do you read as a nurse on a patient? Then you go take his pulse.
Okay.
You only read 1 pulse.
Well, yes, I'm thinking of a different
one. You're talking of ways to read it in a location. You only got 1 pulse. And the 1 pulse tells you what? Systolic and diastolic.
Blood pressure.
All right, and that's all you can measure on your training. An acupuncturist can tell you now when he holds your right hand, after a few seconds, if it's a man, and he knows the time of the ailment, he knows it already, it's gallbladder, he's going to go to his right hand, no, his left hand, and feel the left hand. When he feels the left hand, he'll identify the pulsation of the gallbladder. And he's 100% accurate. Now, once he identifies the pulsation of the gallbladder in the hand by the pulse, just from the same blood that you just read, he's going to go now and tell exactly when that occurred in there and how long that situation was in there by the beating of the blood in the pulse. But it's only related to the gallbladder. All these things you got to find out and prove pathologically in 4 days' time. And he's arriving at all this information in a few seconds. Now, he's going to come over to the gallbladder point in the toe and press, and that guy's going to yell like blue murder. Now we know.
You're establishing the fact that the gallbladder, by the quality of the pulse, and the man, depending on the woman,
depending upon the sex, the hand varies.
And you can feel it now, how are you tying in the time between 11 and 1?
That's the only organ that's going to break down between that time, because the blood is magnified in that state, at that particular area of the body.
Digestion.
Yeah. It's all in there because the blood is high tide in the blood in those organs for 2 hours. In every organ, the blood has a high tide and a low tide, or an energy level. Every 2 hours, it shifts. It's never the same in throughout the body. So we know exactly it's going to be in the gallbladder between 11 and 1 at night. And we can verify it by the wrist. We can verify it by the acupuncture point in the foot. Now, we can correct it by 3 different methods. One is an invasive method, 2 is an oral method, and 3 is an electrostimulant method, or non-invasive method. The doctor knows of 1 method after 4 days of examination. Destructive surgery means to cut the organ out, to get out the stone. The acupuncturist don't cut nothing out. He leaves you with your gallbladder, but he causes the stone to break up by ultrasonic frequencies. Or he can give you printer's ink that will cause the stone to collapse. because he knows that all gallstones are cholesterol based from saturated fats in the body, and by virtue of these methods he can cause them to collapse and you urinate them out. And he can give you now electrostimulation by inserting the needle on the gallbladder and sending an electrical current through the meridian.
Probably you've heard, I know I have, a fish with stone. They go to the amputee and they do all the x-rays on them and everything. They go to, it's worse, they pay attention to a particular area of the kidney and they want to operate or they want to remove the stone in some way. And they lose the stone, it's traveling, they can't find it. Could you find it that way, you know, with an acupuncture point?
Yes, but you don't have to find it because you can get rid of it in 24 hours.
Well, I'm so sure
you have it. Well, it's very simple. Let them go get some parsley and boil it and make it tea and drink it 1 ounce every hour.
Parsley?
1 cup full for every hour.
Every hour? You know how long people stay in the hospital waiting for them to, you know, waiting for that stone to...
This stone will immediately dissolve itself and pass out like little pimples, because that's what parsley is for, basically the specifics. The chemical in parsley is an actual reaction on the kidney stones that are composed of cholesterol.
How about phosphorus?
Too slow.
Will parsley act on phosphorus stones?
If it, parsley will work on phosphorus stones? No, it will not work on a phosphorus stone.
Do you have anything
at
work?
Printer's ink. One drop to one glass of water. Printer's ink. It's in dosages. You drink it and it'll cause the stone to soften up. The next other thing you can take is pure beet juice. That will put it in what is called now semi-plastic suspension and cause it to move.
That will encapsulate it?
Yeah. And soften it up now, and it'll float in that and move on. It'll encapsulate the oxalic acid from the beets will do that, because beets go right through and make you urinate red, you know. When you eat beets, your urination is always red. That is proof that it's going all through and carrying the oxalic acid in. So it will do that to that particular stone. Now, if you take an egg and pour vinegar on top of it and cover it, in a matter of hours, the egg shell will all come off and the egg will be like a little plastic ball. You can pick the whole egg up and pass it through the mouth of a Coca-Cola bottle without breaking the egg, because there's no hard shell now, the calcium is off, it's just the skin, the albumin holding it. Then you fill the bottle with cold salt water and drain the water off after 12 hours and the egg will come back as it was before, solid hard shell. Then you got a puddle person. How did the egg get in the bottle? Which came first, the egg or the bottle? See? That's the same principle in the neck of the uterus and the kidney to the bladder, where the stone is fighting to move on. It's too small. Now the oxalic acid from the beet will go in there in concentrated form and will soften up the outer shell of the stone and encapsulate it and start moving it down, and you will urinate it out. Therefore it will not rupture it in any area and cause bleeding. little comment on, but you see, you're emitting red in you. So that's from the beet juice, anyhow.
Is that raw beet juice?
Yes, raw beet juice. Now, it might be 100% safe. Take raw beet juice and celery juice and drink the whole thing. No, parsley juice and drink it.
Parsley juice?
Parsley juice and beet juice. Together and drink it. Then you've got... You cover all that, shall we?
Wow.
How come? I know it's. How come you and your medical men don't use it? Simple. I'm assuming. Obviously. And they're supposed to. They're supposed to, you know.
Wait a minute. Most of them only have one course of nutrition.
I know.
Maybe they get a COVID first.
I understand.
And they treat the symptoms,
too. Donald, I came across a book called Waters of Life. And in this book, this man drinks every single bit of urine that his body produces. And he says that he gets very great healing from this. And also that the urine from a pregnant woman is supposed to be like the primo. And he said that the only people of the world that were hip to this were the Puerto Ricans. And they used to use the baby's urine on the diaper. They used to wipe it on any kind of skin irritation they had.
How did that hormone
form? Yeah, well, I've been putting it on my face and it cleared up a lot of spots. You knew about that? Well, would you recommend to drink it?
Oh, yeah. But you got to know how to use it.
You mean what proportions or what quantity?
Remember, he's talking of drinking the urine of a person.